And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Good morning. Welcome to Clear Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock. I feel better. My voice isn't that much better, but I feel better. I feel pretty. Well, maybe not pretty, but I feel a lot better. What we're going to do today, let me go ahead and give you the lineup. In the second hour, we're going to have Gavin Seven or Seen. We'll get it right when we have him on. Gavin is the winner of the Checkpoint contest and a Checkpoint content contest, and where Checkpoint USA and Cop Block and LRN or Free Talk Live, Ian, they judged the individual with the best video that could depict what was happening at our checkpoints. And he did it with his family. He went in with himself, his wife videotaping, and three young children in the back. I mean, you know, like 4 years old, 5 years old, you know, baby. And it was, you know, two, three. I mean, they were small children. And he pulled up to the checkpoint. American citizen, he goes, yep, and we're here. We're there violating our right, you know, and just went through the thing and find their, they threw stop sticks in front of them, get video camera out, and finally just, you know, let them go, you know. It's going to become a thing, you know. And so he won that contest, and I, Donna's been working on for like a week to get him on. So we have him in the second hour. In the third hour, we got Pastor Chuck Baldwin from the Flathead Valley in Kalispell, Montana. Now, Chuck Baldwin, many of you may know that we watch him on TV, you know, every Sunday. We had the previous week's sermon that will, you know, and it's always good to keep caught up with Chuck Baldwin, because there's always something interesting going on, because they're, you know, they don't like that none too much, him being up there. Now, we had Pastor Greg Dixon in the studio this week or into last week, and it was interesting, you know, to hear his story, because we've heard his story before, but it repeats all over the country. That's what happened. Here is a gentleman that has one of the largest churches in the country. I mean, it was one of those big mega churches in Indianapolis. And they decided, you know, after studying the word, I mean, they go through and they, you know, take this stuff seriously. I mean, you know, some people take it seriously. It's not just a business, not just a face. It's not just, you know, they get their teeth capped and get all white and their hair slicked back and get up and, you know, God wants you to be rich and he's going to help you by making us rich and giving us some of the money. So he really took the word seriously, and he could see how the government was taking over control of the churches. So he did some research and came to the conclusion that they didn't want to be under the IRS thumb anymore. And they said, no, we're not a 501c3. We're not this. We're not that. We're just God's church, and peace out. He had 22 acres, prime real estate, downtown. Oh, they like you that, you know. Well, you have where the county guy is like, okay, well, looks like all paperwork's in right order. Oh, sheriff, well, yeah, I guess you're right here. And the state, well, okay, you know, and make a good point. In this case, so-and-so versus so-and-so. And, you know, okay, fine, peace out. Federal government, oh, heck no. Because when they decided that the tithing from the church – shouldn't, you know, that be taxed. You know, it's already been taxed by those that, you know, gave it or whatever, making it, or, you know, they didn't care. They're just, you know, once the church gets it, it's the church's. And so when they paid their staff and employees, they wouldn't withhold the federal income tax. Oh, heck no. We can't have us a trend here. Certainly not from a large church. That would set a precedent. No, no. So eventually they took it over, drug people out, and bulldozed the church. Now the Christian church, I mean the Christian school that they had there, now became a, you know, charter school. A government oversaw, you know, you'll learn what we want, and used to be biblical kind of, now it's the man Caesar's church or school. So it it was a really good example and a good story to tell. And Pastor Dixon, you know, that's his mission, is to tell the story. And in his book, he's like, yeah, just getting away from the 501c3 doesn't matter. Because the IRS, and he gave this speech at the Breakfast Club before, and he said, the IRS looks at the fact that you meet makes you a church and puts you under this jurisdiction. Because they said, and the same thing is going to happen with the gun control deal, they don't care what the law says. It's how it's interpreted by the regulators. ATF, the revenuers, you know, they're going to come in and say, hey, you know, we don't care what it says here, or state law, or, you know, kind of you're ours. We don't care what the marijuana laws are that you changed and did and you can and whatever. You're ours. You're on the, you know, the federal government plantation, your livestock. Okay. That's how I want to roll. So after the show, there's another young pastor in Nebraska, up in the right in the center of the panhandle up there. I can't remember the name of the town. Small town, you know, 5,000-8,000 around in there. I remember him saying they say they got 8,500, but he's sure it's quite a bit less than that. Downtown, across the street from City Hall, is a building, 11,000 square foot, multiple story. He bought, no yard, no land, no, not just a building. Downtown, they could refurb into a nice church, and they got their, you know, plan. They talked to the planning guy and the building inspectors and guys that, you know, local. You know, I'm going around, I live in this small local. I'm going to talk to, you know, the representatives, guy at the most local. You know, I'm in this little town, small town, been around since forever. We're out here, farmers doing kind of the middle of nothing in the land of the free, to home of the brave, local. And he goes, hey, we're going to, he goes, I don't care, local. You know, knock stuff out, peace out. You know, somebody needs to do that building anyway, right on, it's cool, you know, have a nice day. You have people with gifts that they want to give to the church, like plumbing, electrical, concrete, whatever needs to be done, carpentry. You know, not enough, you know, Jesus following carpenters around. So they start doing the work, and oh, I'm sorry, you didn't get the right permit. We changed our mind. We fired that guy. Yeah, you got it in writing? Well, that guy, it wouldn't matter anyway. We replaced him with a, you know, he's gone. And we got a new town manager and a new city prosecutor, and quickly followed by two other positions, which would be law enforcement and the police chief. Either he's doing what he's told, or they get a new one. You have a local municipal judge, de la whatever, and they're going to, you know, rule, bang the gavel and say, uh-huh. You know, this is it, law says. Comes from where? For what? Agenda 21 stuff. You only use your land in a certain way, and because, and it gets more and more nationalized. So that's happening. You know, we did a bonus on the archive. You go with Pastor Dixon last few days that we had on, and then we did at the end of the show. He goes, hey, we should call this guy. We got him in his car. Pastor, we spent on for, I don't know, a half hour and telling his story. And I go, we're pretty interested in this story, but I'm telling you, you know, what's going to happen is that in the end, you're going to have to be willing to, you know, lose everything to save your soul. Are you? How far are you willing to take this? What do you think you're going to do? You know, like God all by himself was going to protect you without you having to make a commitment. So we're going to see how that turns out. And a lot of this stuff, you know, I'll prep Pastor Chuck Baldwin with and get his opinion on.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. You know, I want to make sure I bring this part up. You know, I'm still 3 weeks. 3 weeks. You got to give me 3 weeks. When all these big news things happens, the first thing you do is you look behind you. You know, check your six. And I do that, you know, from just experience, that whenever they got a big, you know, whatever, boom, CISPA passes the House. You see my point? You know, boom, we send troops into Jordan to go into Syria to get, you know, up against Russia that's kind of got this Chechenian thing and connection, and they just make it up as they go along. The one thing that, you know, Putin and friends are going to be sitting there wringing their hands and, you know, because now they have RT, Russia Today. Where we had the Voice of America and, you know, broadcasting into the Eastern Bloc and behind the Iron Curtain, and the Soviet Union were giving them what for, and they know how effective it is to have accurate, or at least, you know, well-documented or supported, or yay, somebody's telling what's really going on, and I'm sitting right here watching it happen news. And that was a very effective erosion of the credibility of the government. It is, you want to go after a guy, you want to really just, all you got to do is undermine the legitimacy. You know, one time I'll read the article, you know, 1994, Legitimacy of Government by Ernest Hancock. I mean, you just Google that and it'll come up. And it was an article that was derived out of a email discussion we were having on a right to keep and bear arms list back in the mid 90s, 94. And it was just raging because they're all about, you know, the Constitution says, and I'm like, it was early on that I realized the Constitution's my institution. They don't care. You know, they're holding me, you know, accountable and responsible, and in this contract that I never signed, as, you know, justifying their existence, and gosh darn, I'm going to pay for it. And all the conditions of the contract about what they can't do, Congress shall make no law, blah, blah, blah. You know, they just can't skip over that part. So I'm obligated to all the parts that they want, and they're not obligated to the parts that, you know, make the contract. And at what point does the contract become null and void? When does that happen? I mean, you know, I really got to ask that question, you know, and I do, you know, often, you know, on the show, and, you know, bureaucrats and law enforcement and officers of the court and elected officials. And I just go, look, man, I just got to know this, all this obligation you're talking about, I owe, and love it or leave it, and country and this and that and everything is based on what? You know, government doesn't work. I want my money back. Okay. I mean, you show me where it works. And if I go by the deal, here's the deal. You do this, we won't ever do this, we protect that, America, okay? The troops go and fight and die and give up their bodies for a document, an ideal. Okay, what is it? You know, all right, well, the government's going to protect your individual rights, and we're never going to restrict or infringe on this or that, and you can always this or that, until it threatens the state. You can have rape, murder, war, whatever, you know, freaking genocide, and it's like, we don't care. You know, we'll let them deal with it. It's just, it doesn't matter until somebody challenges the state. Then Mr. Smith comes out. The Men in Black come out. You know, the Matrix security guys come out. They got their little curly things in their ear, dark sunglasses, black suits. Men in Black come out and say, whoa, you're not allowed to challenge the Matrix. You can do whatever you want inside the Matrix, but not challenge the Matrix. I bring this up because there's a piece here on Cavuto with Rand Paul, and I think this is I just started watching it in the break. It just started getting good, and I'm going to go ahead and just pick it up where I left it off here. And I think, here we go. Go ahead and give it a listen.
This guy, hiding in this boat in the backyard. Remember that one? And I thought, apparently with this thermal imaging, you can see a person behind a wall, or in this case, a cover. And I'm thinking, geez, what else can these guys see? I didn't even know they had that ability with a helicopter to do that. But then again, I'm not Wernher von Braun here. I'm just an anger. But I'm telling you, then they have the ability to look at me in my home, or you in your home, or anyone in their home. Now, this was to a desired end, to track down a bad guy. Or an alleged.
But here's the distinction, Neil. I've never argued against any technology being used when you have an imminent threat, an active crime going on. If someone comes out of a liquor store with a weapon and $50 in cash, I don't care if a drone kills him or a policeman kills him. But it's different if they want to come fly over your hot tub or your yard just because they want to do surveillance on everyone and they want to watch your activities.
Yeah, but what if they accidentally, in the pursuit of a crime, Senator, discover something else that looks bad? And it doesn't even have to be really bad, but they'll use that as justification.
Yeah, we shouldn't be. We shouldn't be willy-nilly looking into everyone's backyard and what they're doing. But if there's a killer on the loose in a neighborhood, I'm not against drones being used to search them out, heat-seeking devices being used. I'm all for law enforcement. I'm just not for surveillance when there's not probable cause that a crime's being committed. And so most of the time you get a warrant, but if someone's actively running around with a gun, you don't need a warrant. That's the way our system works. But I don't want the EPA flying over my farm with a drone. I don't want them flying over my backyard with a drone.
But you know what I worry about? That you can reconstruct a case against almost anyone to make them look guilty. And I remember the Atlanta Olympic bomber, Senator. No, we didn't have nearly the technology or the internet that we do today then. But we painted a case of a guy who looked guilty as hell. And then we had to retract that and restate that using and marshaling all the forces that the government had at the time. And they screwed it up. Now, I'm not saying that's the government's intent. I think the government tries to the best of its ability to protect us. And touche to that. What I worry is that they can go after the wrong guy and then rebuild the technological case or proof based on that to unfairly go after that guy.
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, what I'm arguing for is you have a jury trial. But even a jury trial sometimes is imperfect. And you're right. You could reconstruct to make someone look guilty. All you have to do is watch 12 Angry Men to see how the facts seem to indicate someone was guilty. And the more the discussion occurred, the more they decided, well, you know what, maybe he's not guilty. But a jury trial is an amazing thing. We're one of the few countries that have it. And,
oh,
you know, when my relatives go to
fight yeah. Okay, Rand Paul has taken the position that as long as there's a crime being committed, unlimited resources, bring in the drones. Is that militarization of the police? I mean, would you say that an officer shouldn't be able to pull out of his back pocket a little mini drone and throw it up over a house and take a look at whatever and see what's in the bag? I'm looking for somebody. I got a crime. Somebody robbed or whatever. Okay. Well, here we got three Republicans, Lindsey Graham, John McCain, and Kelly Ayotte, saying, you know what? The United States is a battlefield, and we need the justification for droning everybody. Here we go. Man, like a bad sci-fi movie.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com, constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened. It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
All right, here we go. Republican trio pushed to militarize U.S. response to domestic terrorism, which is defined as, you know, whenever we want. Wow, you knew it was coming. You know, let me tell you how you knew this was coming. 3 weeks. I'm going to get all detailed, you know, 3 weeks. But, you know, the one thing that I know is this. Outside the perimeter of where they had their, you know, lockdown of every man, woman, and child inside this area shall have their anal probe inside their house, backyard, dude, whatever. And if you didn't comply, you know, they just bust in. Got, you know, there's going to be some interesting cases come out of this. I can't imagine, you know, nobody suing. And if they don't, then it's, you know, we got some other issues. So what happens is they, you know, bust down, kick in, do and violate everybody's rights and whatever. And then they go, damn it, he was outside of that perimeter. He's hiding in a boat under a tarp, you know, the covering of the boat in somebody's backyard. Guy goes out. He sees on the fender, you know, getting into the boat, some blood. Guy's bleeding. And he's like, damn, man, and, you know, call the cops. Hey, this guy, I looked in, he's unresponsive. He's there, he's dead or dying or whatever. So here comes the cop. We knew that. Yeah, don't worry about it. We knew that. We had drones. We knew that. So we're to believe that, you know, they, you know, oh, we just saw him in the back of your boat with our drone. You know, don't we got it covered. You know, thank you for playing. And I'm telling you, you know, what it really happened. You know, we don't know what really happened. And they're going to say what happened is that their drones found them. We're going to have us some drones. Man, let me tell you, you want to take advantage of a bad situation. Can't let a good crisis go to waste. Okay? Rahm Emanuel thing. Ooh, we got a guy. And look, we got, you know, FLIR footage of him under the tarp and kind of old drones. Their big giant police state didn't find him. Drones didn't find him. It was a homeowner says, hey, man, he's over here. Push all that aside. You know, see, the police state stranglehold works. So here we go. And they're ready. And who do you think? What are the names? Lindsey Graham, South Carolina. John McCain, Arizona. And Kelly Avote, New Hampshire. Now, Kelly Avote or Avote, I have no idea who that is, but they want to be in with the boys. They're another future freaking dictator, so whatever. All right, so let's read what they have to say. Republican Senators Lindsey Graham, John McCain, Kelly Avote lashed out at liberals and libertarians. Ooh, we get, you know, we get billing. You know, about time. Whatever. And it's to make us look good, right? You know, now, of course, see, I don't even care if it's whatever, you know, put us on the other side. Thank you. Liberals and libertarians on Tuesday claiming it was dangerous to oppose the notion the United States was a battlefield. Of course, we're a battlefield. You know, we're in an emergency state of whatever forever so we can do whatever we want. The three senators have been pushing for Boston Marathon bombing suspect Zakhar Tsarnaev, DT, I'm just going to call him DT from now on, to be treated as an enemy combatant for intelligence purposes. The term enemy combatant was controversially used by the Bush administration to refer to alleged members of Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, making them neither criminals nor prisoners of war. Speaking on the Senate floor, the three Republicans said the government should expand the definition of an enemy combatant to include any domestic terrorist inspired by radical Islam. Well, they're just going to add on to radical Islam, radical patriotism, radical thisism, radical thatism. I mean, you know, get ready, here it comes. They said DT should be interrogated as an enemy combatant before being transferred to the civilian justice system, despite the fact he is an American citizen. You know, I saw this coming in the Bush administration, 03, 04. And I remember when it happened, they needed to come up with an enemy combatant thing. And they were talking about the Taliban here and everything. And I tell you where it came from. It was, Walker, what's his name? There was a young guy, got all Islamic and everything, and he did what his conscience told him. You know, I believe I'm going to go over to Afghanistan and help the Taliban against the evil whatever. U.S. didn't have any involvement in it. He's, pursuing his own conscience and did it the way you're supposed to. Now, in my opinion, am I allowed not to care? It's his, he wants to go over and, peace out. Didn't do it in my name. Didn't spend my money. Now, if we want to do the same kind of thing, and get all legal about it and, in their mind legal, they'll take the idea that what he did is not superior to how the military-industrial complex does it. What do? They put a gun to my head. They take my money. Or they indebt me and my grandchildren and children into the future to pay for an entire military to go over and just bomb and beat the crap out of for whatever reason they come up with. That's okay. That's legal, okay? Constitutional, or whatever else they want to say it is. But take an individual that takes it upon themselves and puts literally their own life on the line for an ideal that they want to fight for whatever reason, right, wrong. See, it doesn't matter. Without government, what are you going to worry about? A riot? I mean, what's the largest collective force? Are you going to have bad guys and bands of armed people doing stuff and everything? Yeah, but you don't have entire armies. So they go over to Afghanistan, lay waste, doing drones still, and it's the longest war the United States has ever been in our entire history, Afghanistan. Eclipses Vietnam. So they go over and do all this, that's okay. But an individual making the decision, they're on our side, they're not on our side, it's back and forth, it changed. You're just supposed to get the memo from the White House on which side you're allowed to fight on. And if you're Blackwater or a mercenary or you got contacts in the million, then you'll know when to make the shift, make the switch. Not this guy anymore, that guy. You're just doing it for money. But to do it for personal ideological reasons, you're not allowed if they change policy or change sides. So when this young man got caught in a battle, a firefight of whatever, and they find out, hey, man, you shaved that beard up, man, that boy's American. Now what? How do you classify him? Are they prisoners of war? Is he, what is he? Does he get any kind of due process? How the heck do we deal with this? Well, we just give him classification. He's an enemy combatant. What does that mean? I don't know. Whatever the heck we want it to mean. Does he get rights? Does any human being, is he under military control? Is he a prisoner of war? All these little boxes they want to put you in, where do you put this guy? Well, then they wanted to be able to determine that you are an enemy combatant. And if you, enemy combatants, didn't have, there was another classification they had too. It was during Ashcroft and Romney, such days. But the bottom line is that if we can strip you of your U.S. citizenship, if we can say you're not a citizen anymore, then you don't get human rights. Centuries of law. And the history of the United States was that the citizenship issue never came up. America was home base. Our laws equally applied to everyone. That's what, caused a bunch of problems when you started doing the welfare state. Human beings meeting some criteria, which citizenship was not part of that, gets equal access to, like education, healthcare, all kinds of different things they come up with. How did that happen? Because the United States Constitution recognized human beings as individual, breathing, sentient, right-filled individuals. It never had anything to do with citizenship. If they link it to citizenship, then all of a sudden they can just take that citizenship away and you're left with no humanity. That's what started happening in 03.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free.
Yeah, from your lies. Lies, lies, lies. Let's go ahead and see what John McCain has to say here. What does he say? Ultimately, the broader question is whether you view the United States as part of the battlefield in the global fight against terrorists, McCain remarked. I know that some don't. I, however, don't see how we can avoid this fact. We cannot afford to build a wall between the fight against terrorists abroad and a fight against terrorists who are trying to attack us here at home, including when American citizens are involved in this fight, as some clearly are and will continue to be. Graham noted Jose Padilla, a U.S. citizen, was arrested as an enemy combatant in 2002 and detained at a U.S. Navy prison in South Carolina for nearly 4 years without charge. He was allegedly tortured while in military custody. Unlike DT, Padilla had connections to Al-Qaeda. We're at war with a radical ideology that hates everything that we stand for, Graham added. As a matter of fact, radical Islam is regenerating, and the way they are coming after us is to find people in our own backyard and turn them against us. Ayotte argued the Obama administration was endangering Americans by not allowing DT to be interrogated by the military without a lawyer. Well, radical Islam shouldn't be hating us for our freedom anymore because we don't have it anymore. So I guess we're good. You know, that's over. So you can see how, in my opinion, this is not about, you know, one, two guys doing a gunpowder bomb that, you know, hurt 170 whatever people and killed three. You know, it's not about that. It's about the expansion of power, police, military power over us. The rest of the country is now under, you know, so goes one, so goes everybody. That's the idea. And I don't see where this goes, but bad. And I don't see a fix. It's an abandonment, but it has to happen up here. So what do you do? I already, you know, I've been thinking about this for the past couple of months, even before we started with the, you know, what happened in Boston. You know, it's really been building up. I could see this coming. So I'm going, all right, how do we combat this? What do we do? We all see they're bad. I mean, there's one, you always wish that you had the capacity to get the message out to people. And we have a lot, you know, communications, you know, the television networks like Next News Network. Radio networks like LRN.FM, you know, national radio shows penetrating the matrix like Free Talk Live. We have all of the freedom-oriented websites and so on like Freedom's Phoenix. We're able to archive a lot of this stuff and give you detailed articles and so on Freedom's Phoenix and the Freedom's Phoenix e-zine. You know, we're on the streets like the Lovolution. And we've penetrated Generation Next across the planet. That is the biggest, scariest, out-of-controlest thing that they're worried about. But they don't know any other tool other than brute force. You will comply or die, and you're going to pay for it, and we got all of these troops that are used to kicking in doors and putting, you know, black bags over people's heads in other countries, and they're coming here, and we're giving them a job. And anyone that you know that's, you know, wanting to do good, go into law enforcement, if no matter what their degrees are, no matter how many, I have personal experience with this, you know, kids and friends and so on, going, you know, they're just not mean enough. They just don't have the right attitude. They're not in support of the thin blue line, hell or high water. They're not in the club because they don't have the right mindset. You know, of course, I would prefer to have good guys in there. You know, but good guys are not what's wanted. You don't really mean badass guys. You will comply. What do you hear a lot in these things? You know, they tased and beat the crap out of someone while he didn't submit. I mean, they'll say that. He wouldn't submit. He wouldn't submit. He wouldn't submit. I'm not sure what that means. You know, would he not allow himself to be handcuffed? Or he just wouldn't say thank you, sir, as he's being handcuffed. I mean, where's the line? This battle is not going to be won with guns. It's not. You know, when the redcoats come and say, which way did the rebels go? You know, the willingness of the people to say, oh, yeah, I just saw him. He went that way. You know, that's the win. You know, for them. If you get the people wanting to, yes, oh, absolutely. Ooh, America. Okay. That way. Or, you know that they're fighting bad and evil and they're good people and your neighbors and kind. You go, I don't know which way he went. Or he went that way. Or I don't know what you're talking about. You know, so I mean, you got to get the people on your side. And the only way you could do that, to turn America into a complete police state, is to have them agree and support the idea that we are at war on a battlefield here in America. And to do that, you have to have an enemy that's here. How do you do that? The only way to do that is, you know, for us to have the war be against us from they, them, those. Is it another country? No. It's a made-up thing. It's an ideology. It's a Al-Qaeda. It's whatever. Al-Qaeda was a product of the CIA. I mean, you know, come on. How do we battle this? Well, we're doing pretty good with, you know, at least chronicling, you know, what's happening. And then they'll seed, you know, that's why I do this three-week thing. Because they'll seed so many conspiracy and other guys and doing kind of distractions and over here and that and tinfoil hat accusations of and see this didn't really. A lot of times it's within the first 10 minutes or 10 hours of an event that you get a lot of the real information out. You know, the eyewitness, I was there with my iPhone kind of stuff. You know, before they put their own narrative. And then later you'll find out a bunch of other stuff too from witnesses that come forward. Well, this cycle is happening faster and it's being accumulated quicker. But you got to plow through all the other crap. So, 3 weeks. It always takes 3 weeks because they're always more concerned about dragging it out, get their narrative, get their storyline in as quick as they can. They do it in a 24 news hour cycle, 48-72. In the 3 days, they all, you know, pretty much you know what's what and where they're going in 3 days. Well, it's been, what, a week and a half? In a week and a half, they can drag it out a week, drag it out 2 weeks. A lot of times they can't go 3 weeks. So I always wait 3 weeks because, you know, by the third week, you know, you start getting a lot of counter evidence for other, and by then they don't care. They're like, yeah, you know, but we, you know, we already have what happened. It was 16, you know, Arab terrorists that, you know, we found their unburned smoking passport on the street in the rubble of the World Trade Center. I mean, you know, that kind of crap. And I'm going, okay. So here we go again. To what end? What's already happening? We're going to have permanent surveillance of America and Americans. But Rand Paul goes, well, I'm not, you know, yeah, you can have all these drones, but only when you're going after a criminal, you know, when they, you know, somebody, you know, robbery, 10, 11, 40, whatever the heck, 10 number, there's a robbery at the 7-Eleven and the bank and De La and whatever, here come the drones. I remember I was just watching Blue Thunder. Yeah, I didn't finish it. I remember it was Rob Schrider, the guy that played the sheriff in Jaws, was a Vietnam helicopter pilot. This was 1983. Blue Thunder. You guys go watch that and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. It was about the Olympics was coming to LA, I guess. And I can't remember when that was, 84, where it was. But they were saying, hey, when the Olympics come, are we going to have helicopter gunships used for ground control? I remember the line, he goes, gunships for ground control? We tried that. It didn't work. And they go, really? When? He goes, Vietnam. Well, it works if they want to make money. If it works if they want to put on a show, it works if they are willing to lay waste to everybody's rights and civilians around and, you know, have the firepower. And that was the controversy in the film Blue Thunder. Are the people are already pissed off about police helicopters all over the place and buzzing and everything, which is kind of the theme in it. But it's coming. Well, now it's not going to be, and they're going to be quiet. There'll be itty bitty baby drones, blimps over, you know, thousands of feet up over Salt Lake City a year or two ago. Remember that? You know, surveillance. Big Bubba is here, and he likes to look. But it's okay as long as it's a criminal that's, you know, deemed enemy combatant and made the wrong Facebook post. I mean, you know, where does it stop? It stops up here. We're working on the up here. Where else would you go? And where else would you be more effective? We'll be right back.
Studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Unafeared individuals. Oh, that's what we like to talk to. Oh, yeah, my voice is that. It's coming back. Okay. Gavin Seam. Now, let's get that right off the bat. Gavin, am I saying your last name right?
You got it backwards. It's Syme, but everybody gets it wrong. So it's Syme. Gavin Syme.
Gavin Syme, and you need to know his name because you're going to hear more about it. He is a photographer. Now, we just had yesterday our webmaster here. He's been hiking Arizona forever, a photographer, and he did his first book. You know, Arizona, right. You know, photography, kind of, it's like Arizona Highways, 500 pictures, doing kind of, so we were talking a lot about photography yesterday, and what he's doing right. Is just like, how much can I get away and out and show the beauty of? Well, in the process of what you do, going around the country with your family, you know, you're on the road a lot, and your children, let's talk about your family, because your family were involved in this event. I'm going to play some of the video, that the winning video here, just get the beginning of it, and we'll go through it. But my first question is, how old are your children?
My children are 1, 3, and 5.
Okay, so we're talking little kids, and you know what? And it reminds Donna, my wife, and I of our 4 children. We've been married 28, 9, whatever years. How?
Awesome.
29? 8. 28 years, okay?
29. You better remember that.
I know. It's her job. She's starting to lose track now, too, so I don't feel so bad. So,
okay.
So what's happened is, in our early days, in the late 80s, early 90s, our children were that age. And we were involved a great deal in activism, exposing, doing this kind of stuff. And people were very concerned, you know, that we would have our children there. And I'm going,
right.
You know, we're not looking to cause a problem. We're not, you know, thumping people on the sternum or anything. You know, we're just out, you know, learning and expressing. And they grew up understanding, you know, when something would happen at an event and then they see it on the news later, the two weren't even close to being the same thing. So they lived
right.
It, understood, and the legitimacy of government and their, you know, handout press release of what happened, they learned at a very young age that that wasn't so. Now, sitting in the, let me go ahead and finish, sitting in the car, I'm going to turn you off because you're one of those guys that cannot not talk and you'll get your turn, but mine first. The one thing is that from the beginning, the earliest memories, earliest age, they're seeing what actually happened, what they say happened at checkpoints. Now, let's go ahead and start, you know, this, the award-winning part of this is him giving his opinion about what's going on as his wife is taping. He's rolling up to the checkpoint, and let's go ahead and give it a listen.
Now, most of us weren't around in Nazi Germany, but what we see here in America these days is these checkpoints where they just stop us at the border, ask questions, and pressure us. They violate the Constitution by demanding that we answer questions, and the real question is, am I being detained?
Yes.
On what grounds am I being detained?
Constitution.
The Constitution. I'm being detained. Come here. This is C. Castine. I'm being detained on grounds of the Constitution. That's a new one on me, actually. So, they're stopping us for no apparent reason. We're just traveling the highway as U.S. citizens. And here we are, cruising along. This guy is so out of touch with the law that he says, I'm being stopped and detained on the grounds of the Constitution. This is where we are.
He's getting a video camera now.
Excellent.
Great.
So
more video cameras are better.
We're being stopped because of the Constitution. Just bear with us here. We're going to
see. Okay, now this is what I found. As you go through this, you know, they eventually, within a couple of minutes, it wasn't very long, and they let him go. And they wanted to, you know, intimidate. You know, they do what they do. They went and get their video cameras, and they'll throw stop sticks in front, and then they'll say, leave, wait, get the stop sticks, you know. And so he made a very good demonstration of what actually happens to him on the road. All right, Kevin, it's your turn now. Why were you doing this, and what has been your experience on the road in the past? Go ahead, and how'd you even hear about the contest? Go.
You know, to be honest, I didn't make the video for anything related to a contest. I submitted that afterward because I posted it and they reached out to me. I made the video because that's what I do with these guys. I record pretty much any encounters with law enforcement, especially Border Patrol agents and things like that, anything especially where I feel like there could be an issue that arises. But we travel. I mean, you know, as a pictorialist, I'm traveling and we're running around the countryside with the family. And free nations don't have arbitrary checkpoints. I am so tired of this kind of crap. You know, I should not have to be stopped driving down the highway with my family to be questioned by federal agents. And so when I do, I mean, this isn't the first time this has happened, and I've had dealings with them on this before, and I guess this time, you know, I'm a little bit of a, you know, I'm a bit of a ham. I'm a presenter and stuff myself, and so I thought, well, let's make this into kind of a little dialogue, a little narrative to talk about this. And it was, you know, I was sweating a little bit pulling up there. But I kind of took the approach of, you know, what if I just ignore these guys and just talk to the camera, and because I know what they're going to say, you know, I know the rigmarole they're going to give me. Although I didn't honestly expect him to say that I was being detained because of the Constitution. That was
beauty right there. I'm going.
That was
okay.
A on top of the present. But
here's your $20. Thank you for playing.
Yes, exactly. So my tolerance with my government and my federal government and this idea that we give up freedom in the name of security, and I'll debate it with people. Some people, you know, a lot of people totally relate to me on this. Other people are like, oh, what's the big deal? Just answer their questions. Why? Why are we answering the questions? Why are we being stopped in the middle of the road, in, you know, going down the highway on vacation, being asked questions by federal agents? How is that their business? And people need to understand it's not about the 3 minutes. I mean, I would be through faster. This is what they say. You'd be through, you know, in no time at all if you just cooperate. Yes, I would. But what happens down the road? We keep giving up more and more and more. You know, pretty soon, 20 years from now, do they get to take my daughter in a back room and interrogate her? You know, where does it end?
No, they're going to take your daughter for asking the question. See, you're endangering your children in the back seat by you, blah, blah, blah. They always, 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 always eventually use the children as leverage for your compliance.
Exactly. They love to use the children. And some people, most people get it. You know, it's not like I'm not on the road going to challenge checkpoints. I honestly didn't know that checkpoint was there. And I, you know, I have my kids with me. We travel for 2-3 months. I mean, I'm in Utah right now. Overlooking, you know, the Zion Valley, parked up here where I could get cell reception, and you know, this is part of what we do, part of the year. And I'm certainly not going to leave the kids behind because I might have to deal with checkpoints. Nor am I going to not stand for freedom. It's ironic to me that we live in a society where society considers it acceptable to, you know, send our kids to a public education system that completely indoctrinates them against freedom and against morals, and you know, that's like this pit where you send your kids, and yet if you have your kids with you and you're actually teaching them about freedom and values and America, somehow you're endangering them, and I just don't see that.
They don't care what you see, man.
And I don't care what they see. So.
When we come back, more with Gavin, and we'll go ahead and understand the impact of him actually doing this video. Did he get any response? Did people talk about it? They email him. What'd they have to say? You know, I'm interested in the reaction. You know, is there any repercussions from the government? You know, what about his websites? You know, they get visited more? I don't know, all that's good things you might want to know. We'll know it when we come back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
Yeah, and on that list of names, I can tell you it's going to be Gavin Seam. Now, is it Syme or Seam? I apologize.
Syme, no problem.
Syme. Gavin Syme, professional photographer, on the road, takes his wife and kids with him, you know, months at a time, going around doing scenic photographs. He does, you know, portraits, you know, artsy kind of thing, even does classes. You look up the film Exposed is kind of a, you know, I guess, infomercial on the classes that he gives on the use of light, which is, you know, photographer, man. I'm telling you, you know, I walk into a situation, a scene or whatever, and I'm going, is this going to be a snapshot? Or are we going to make us a nice photograph? And this is a skill that is very, very, very important in the conveying of an idea, conveying of, more important than anything else, oftentimes it's an emotion. If you look, a lot of times when we do our covers for the magazine and everything, I get final approval and all that stuff. I'm just going, look, it has to give the right emotion. I'm going, how do I feel about this? Well, the picture that we're painting here, that we're taking here, is of a family that's just traveling in the course of their profession and their own personal lives doing leave me aloneism, that are near borders, not borders, in the middle of the country, on going into a foreign country. What, they're just traveling. And I want to get a picture of what it is that makes you concerned. I mean, are you just, what, you know, traveling and all of a sudden you're getting stopped and you're like, look, I'm sick of this, or this is, you know, I'm afraid that this is too much like Nazi Germany kind of thing or something. What's your concern, and where were you traveling when this happened?
I guess the answer would be all of the above. You know, I'm in this case, I was in New Mexico. I was 80 to 100 air miles, I would say, from the Mexican border. And we're driving, I believe it was 70, towards Alamogordo to go to White Sands. We camped the super camper out there and spent a few days down in White Sands. My kids love going to the sand dunes there and sledding down the sand dunes, and got some neat photos as well. But so we went out there, and for me, I feel like the concern is when I'm running around the Southwest, I'm genuinely wondering, you know, there's this tension when you drive down the road and suddenly there's a sign and it says checkpoint ahead. Every time now I see a flashing road work sign, I'm like, okay, is this another one of those? And it's not the idea that, oh, they're going to do something so horrible, I might get arrested like I would have in Nazi Germany, so much as, you know, what is this? Why is it? And of course, in my case, what are the ramifications of me refusing to cooperate? Because that's what I do, is I refuse to cooperate. And when you're going down the road with your family, I mean, there's certainly a concern of my family. And my wife and I have talked about this many times in terms of, okay, at some point, if I do this, you know, I'm going to get arrested. And basically the policy is, if I get arrested, you know, answer the questions and move on through and go find a place to settle down with the camper. And she's perfectly capable of doing that, you know, versus, you know, I don't want to get into a situation where we both get arrested and they try and, you know, take our kids and things like that. So she's kind of the fallback plan on that, even though we've never had to deal with that. But that's kind of, you know, loosely the direction that we would go. And I'm just trying to travel and see the beauty of America with my family and be able to do it as a family, enjoy that trip. You know, it's work, but it's also a vacation for us. And I shouldn't have to be stopped in the middle of the road and be questioned. It's none of their business. I'm a very social guy. I don't mind talking to people about what I'm doing. But when it's federal agents demanding that I tell them this or that, I take a serious issue for that as a constitutional-loving American.
How many times have you done this? Just, hey, look, am I being detained? I mean, you know, what do? Do you answer the questions normally and just fill in this one? Do you do it every single time? I mean, you know, how often do you even come across a checkpoint? Because here in the Southwest, if you travel anywhere, you're coming across a checkpoint in southern Arizona. I mean, that's just, you know, the way I already know which one's there. We've had cases to where, you know, my partner on the Freedom Summit that we do for years, Mark Victor, was the attorney on several cases, and most notably Pastor Anderson, you know, and immediately the day after he was all beaten and everything, we had him on video. We're doing an interview with him and what happened, and that case went to a not guilty. But, I mean, he had to go through a lot of stuff.
A lot of mud to be drugged through. And no, my policy, first of all, I don't, you know, we've probably only been stopped at checkpoints a couple times this year. Frankly, I mean, it's kind of terrible, but, you know, I actually will, you know, once, if there's nothing there I feel I need, I will purposely move away from that area because I don't want to have to deal with those checkpoints. They really bother me. And my general policy anymore is I will not cooperate with any of them. It's not, you know, it's not just when I film them. I mean, I film all of them. And, you know, that was the only one that came up this year, although actually we did go through that same checkpoint the next day and went around with them a little bit, and then they recognized me, and they were actually yelling at me, telling me to get out of there, and I wasn't getting out of there quick enough because I was explaining the Constitution to them. So the first time it occurred was last year, you know, because that was the first really long trip. We did a four-month trip last year, and it was our first big trip around the Southwest, so that was kind of my first encounter with these. And admittedly, some of them, you know, they don't have a dialogue. They'll just, the big ones on Interstate 10 or something, sometimes they'll kind of look at you and just wave you through, and those ones don't really turn into anything. The one that became an issue last year, and I do have a video, I just haven't posted it because it was kind of long, and I got to get it on there sometime, but we were coming on, I think it was Highway 60 or something like that, out of Big Bend National Park in Texas. So again, we had not crossed the border, but we were coming up from that direction, and there's this checkpoint. And at that point, I had been, you know, looking on sites like CopBlock and things like that, trying to figure out, okay, what's the ramifications of this? Am I required to answer these guys' questions? And you know, the general consensus I could find at the time, you know, this was a year ago, was no, I don't have to answer questions. But I couldn't really find whether or not I had to answer the question of am I a United States citizen? I couldn't find a lot of information because, you know, you go places and people say, well, of course you have to answer the questions, and other people say, no, you don't. So we pull up, and we're pulling our trailer in the truck, and I drive up to this checkpoint, and I pull up, and this kid comes up to the window, and he says, where are you coming from? And I said, it's none of your business. And he said, well, pull over to secondary. And I said, am I being detained? He said, pull over to secondary. And we ran around a little bit. I said, am I being detained? He said, pull over to secondary. And I said, on what grounds am I being detained? And he said, for immigration purposes. And I said, I'm not immigrating. And I put the truck in park in the middle of the highway, and he called his friends out, and they said, you got to pull over to secondary. I said, I'm not pulling anywhere unless you give me probable cause why I'm being detained. And I was sweating. I mean, I had no idea. This was the first time I'd ever done this, and I was, you know, out there. So it was intimidating for me, for sure. But I didn't move. I blocked the highway for 15 minutes, and they finally had to route the highway around me because I said, I will not pull over to secondary. And at that time, in that one, I actually did tell them I was a U.S. citizen because at the time I couldn't have found any information of what would happen to me if I didn't. So that I determined, hey, that's all I'm giving them.
When we come back, you know, we'll get into this further and where this goes, because I, you know, when you start to get a little information like this, you know, they don't want it shared. They don't want you to be an inspiration to others. They want you to be an example. We got a future example coming, or a future freedom fighter that's going to blaze a trail for the rest of us? Let's find out.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It's a curious thing. Make a one man weep, make another man sing. Change your heart to a little white dove.
Love. You know, I'm looking for how far this power can go. And some people are willing to push the edge. And when Gavin certainly, you know, pushing a little bit on at least the edge of the envelope. And with his family, you know, because it's, and I'll tell you, as many of you that might think that's kind of risky and so on, what's the risk of not? I mean, we did it with our children. I don't have to, everything that goes on in the news, I don't have to explain everything to them. Maybe my, you know, son-in-law or daughter-in-law, you know, I'll let their spouses, my daughter and son, you know, explain it to them. What, but they, I don't have, because they lived it. You know, all the protests, they went to, they knew it was election time because of the envelope stuffing, you know, bribed with, you know, movies and pizza, you know, all right, you know, all six of us sitting around and do it. Cause when you got a bunch of kids, man, you become a force. So you can sit there and fold and seal and, you know, insert and whatever you want to do, you get a lot of things done. So we were, made them part of it. But when they got of testosterone age and estrogen age and started to reach puberty and going into high school and so on, we backed off. Because by then, they're just, you know, if you haven't raised them by the time they hit puberty, it's too late anyway. So we let them kind of, you know, under our guidance, kind of, you know, have a lot of freedom. They understood, but they were already adults. Heck, when I grow up, I want to be like my youngest daughter when she was freaking 10. I mean, you know, 12. So this is how you raise a aware, awake human being, adult. You treat them like adults from childhood. You know, you negotiate with them. You make sure they understand. You use logic and reason and experience. How has this affected your children and your family and your wife? I mean, you know, certain people with certain personalities, such as yourself, you know, kind of, you know, this is natural for you. How supportive are they? How afraid are they? Do they understand what's going on, that sometime there may be a jackboot on the neck, back of the neck of their father on the side of the car? Are they prepared for that?
Well, my wife is, of course, and Sandra's great. I mean, she totally relates to me on this stuff. And the kids, you know, Cyrus is 5, so he's getting to the age where he's starting to say, hey, what's the deal? And he says, you know, well, you know, are those the bad guys? He, you know, we don't, people say, oh, you're teaching them to disrespect authority. No, I'm teaching them to respect justice. And, you know, I mean, we don't teach our kids with this mindset of, oh, because that's a policeman, you know, you'd never want to interact with them. But we're definitely training them with this mindset of look, you know, here's what's happening. And don't underestimate a 5-year-old. You know, people say, oh, those are little kids, they can't understand that. You want to bet they can't? You know, what, they start picking this stuff up very, very quickly. And Cyrus is starting to get it. And, you know, we're not trying to promote the idea with our kids that we need to be out there just trying to fight everybody that we see. I mean, we want to get along with people, but when it comes down to dealing with the state, dealing with government, you know, I'm teaching my kids about freedom in hopes that we can still save it, because I'm genuinely kind of concerned. I mean, at the end of the day, all I can do is just say a prayer and take it one day at a time. But I feel like my kids are not going to have America. You know, I grow up looking for this American dream, and I'm kind of seeing it washed away as a young adult with kids, and I'm thinking, what are my kids going to have? So basically what I'm trying to do is make my kids aware and also try and make other people aware. You know, these checkpoints, if everybody told these people, you know, to shove it, I'm not cooperating with you, and, you know, they would go away. We cannot just say, oh, in the name of security, oh, they're just trying to do their job. No, you know, those kids that ran the gas chambers in Nazi Germany were just doing their job too. It is never, ever an excuse. The idea that we must be patriotic to the state itself rather than to the freedom we hold dear is a lie.
You know, I'll give you an example. Criminal defense attorney Mark Victor, the attorney that took Pastor Anderson's case, and we argued 4409, you know, Shelton's case in the Yuma checkpoint and so on. His children are now like 13, 14 and so on. But I remember when they were very young, one of their neighbors and a good friend of his, it was a police officer. And he was watching them one time, and his wife went over to their neighbors, and they were just watching the kids while Mark and his wife went out and did something. And they're reading a book, and they have one of these books, and it has, oh, and this is the fireman, and he does this, and this is the baker, he does that, and here's the policeman. Oh, I'm a policeman. And the kids got all quiet, sat there, goes, what's wrong? They go, we don't talk to policemen. And that has been the mantra that they got from their criminal defense attorney. He's all, and they hear him all the time telling friends and clients, don't talk to the police. You don't talk to the police. Hey, where were you? What was it? You don't talk to the police. You know, you can't get in trouble for saying you wouldn't answer or whatever, you know, and criminal defense attorney. So the kids had to be, you know, go to the next level of explanation. Well, he's a friend that, you know, yada, but still might apply. I mean, you know, so yes, the kids picked this stuff up. And, you know, we had a little bit different tack of just, you know, kind of what's the proper role of, and it kind of generally applies to all government. They're there to protect individual rights, to do this, and when they're not doing that, then they're bad guys. I don't care what the badges they have. So
exactly.
I'm looking at a long term. You see it starting to slip away. And this is all about, for me, this Lovolution is the Lovolutionaries surviving the revolution and the next step. And it's freeing yourself between the ears. And, you know, freedom good and, you know, you know, government bad. But I mean, you know, why? Why is government bad? Because it's this monopoly of force to make you do whatever in service of. And I'm going, so the next generation, you represent generation next as you're raising them. So what is the core value that you think they should get out of this? You know, we just don't talk to cops because they're cops. You know, they're the bad guys, or we don't talk to them because they represent a system. We don't, you know, am I being detained? Because, I mean, what is, if you wanted to instill and have a germ of truth that will show itself to be true over and over and over throughout their life and their experience with you and the family and driving, what is that kernel base foundation truth that you would like to build upon?
Well, you know, obviously for me, with the foundation I really try and build on is, you know, we're conservative, Bible-based Christians, and that comes back to it with us and the way we behave. But on a government level, I'm not teaching my kids, nor do I feel that, oh, you know, police need to go, all police are bad, all government is bad. But even our founding fathers knew that government was a problematic thing, you know, that it needed to be kept small. And basically the foundation I'm teaching my kids is justice, is freedom, is the Constitution, is the Bible, is, you know, here's the Constitution, and it does not matter what badge you wear or what label you have. You do not earn respect by the job that you possess. You earn respect by your actions and whether they're just and right. And that's the basic foundation that I'm trying to teach them, and, you know, I'm trying to raise them up in a way that they understand that. And so if there is any chance of saving America from total tyranny, you know, so if there is any way that we can do this without
ultimately... Oh, we're starting to lose you. We lost him. Donna, go ahead and hang it up and call him back. You know, the one thing that I want to comment, you know, when we get him back on, and I'm going to kind of spring on him, is that, you know, I'm looking at what is the Constitution? You say we're constitutional and constitutional. Well, what did the border guy say? In the name of the Constitution, we have pulled you over to, I mean, you know, then what? And what did your kid say? I don't know. He had a uniform. You know, he said the word Constitution. What does that mean? You know, it's just a, you know, what? So I'm looking at this as, you know, there's lessons here. And we'll get him during the break. We'll get him back when he comes back on. We'll bring that point up. I'm very afraid of this. You know, everything's constitutional. You just ask the Supreme Court. They'll tell you whether it is or not. So I'm going, yeah, you know, justice might be a better word. Proper role of, and does government have a proper role? I mean, seriously, you know, I mean, it's all up here. All these things that happened out there are an example. But if we use our resistance or justification to justify, you know, better government, we're still supporting the idea that we get ruled. That's a sickness. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Yeah, and I want to take a picture of it and share it with everybody and travel through it and enjoy it. And be left alone in my leave-me-aloneism country. It's not getting that way anymore. So here we have, you know, Gavin, go ahead and give out where they can go and find out more. You can go to freedomsphoenix.com, today's archive of the show, and we'll have all the links and so on to his video, to his work, his pages by which he's known in his photographs and so on. So what we'll go ahead and do is, you know, let's take an opportunity to just get to know Gavin a little bit, but go ahead and give out, you know, your favorite webpage that they need to go to.
Yeah, just real quick, I'll just give my main website, which is kind of a portal to all of my projects because I have too many, and that is SeimStudios.com, S-E-I-M Studios.com, and Twitter at Gavin Seim as well. And from SeimStudios.com, you can find everything that I do pretty much. So,
now, the one thing, before we lost connection, you know, teaching children coming up, you know, Christian oriented freedom, kind of government, leave me aloneism, constitutional thing. And it's amazing to me in this film video that you did that you'll be most noted for and won the prize for, and you got your camera and everything, is that the first thing out of the border agent's mouth, and you said, am I being detained? And by what right are you detaining me? And he goes, Constitution. So I got a guy with a badge there saying it's the Constitution that gave him the authority to do this, and you're trying to teach your kids that this is unconstitutional, and the guy's wearing a badge. So I'm going, you know, Constitution, I mean, what does that mean? The government gave themselves the authority to determine what was and was not constitutional. Right. They decide. The Supreme Court, you know, it's constitutional, then 20 years later, it's not, and then it back is again, and so I'm back and forth. You know what? Credibility. What's the consistency there? So I'm, really? You know, I mean, the Constitution, how is that, you know, are you defending, if you defend the Constitution, you're defending their ability to interpret it. You see my point? It's just like a circle jerk.
Yeah, I do see your point, but personally, I mean, while I realize that the Supreme Court does exist, and what I'm getting at is the Constitution was based on fundamental, God-given moral rights. John Adams said that our Constitution was made only for moral and religious people, and it's wholly inadequate for the government of any other. There's only so much I can do. I consider the Supreme Court criminals in that they allowed these checkpoints to exist. What part of shall not detain do you not understand? What part of shall not infringe the right to bear arms do you not understand? When the Supreme Court ignores the Constitution, it is they that are the criminals. That doesn't mean there's anything I can do about it. You know, other than say so, other than stand up for my rights. But if the people would start saying no, the Constitution, people always say, well, you're not qualified to interpret the Constitution. Yes, I am. The Constitution is the most simple legal document that I think Americans have ever written. I mean, you know, your terms of service for signing up for a website are 400 times longer than the Constitution. I mean, it's so elegant and inspired and simple as far as I'm concerned. And it works because it's based on simple moral godly values. That doesn't mean everybody in America has to be a Christian, but we have a basis of this in the Constitution, and so that's what can I do other than teach my kids values?
Well, yeah, see, that was the promise that they made. It's constitution. You know, the Constitution is there because, and if you read the Constitution, you know, you just go, that's why this show is Declare Your Independence, because the Declaration of Independence is pretty clear. It's like the only purpose of government is to defend individual rights. And when it becomes destructive of that, alter, abolish your duty. Right. You know, okay, I'm hip to that. You know, the Constitution is kind of, you know, a decade later, you know, they kind of do this thing and they're going to redo this thing. And what was the thing that they did? Heck, you know, I think the only federal crime, you know, was treason against the Constitution, you know, which was what?
Right.
Their authority to rule you. You know, I'm going, okay, if you read the Constitution, it's all about the power eminent domain, the power to the tax, the power to regulate interstate commerce, you know, the power. Well, a lot of the libertarians of the day, the anti-federalists, like, no. Yeah, man, I don't see any limits on this power. And you get to interpret whatever you want to do with the power. That's where the Bill of Rights came from, to stop a second revolution right when it got started in the new country. And they go, okay, we'll put the lid in the thou shalt nots. Oh, yeah, we're into it, man. Go ahead, vote it for you. Go, boom, we got it. And then who gets to interpret it? So here we have all this infringing and stuff, and Congress shall pass no law. But they do. In the name of what? The Constitution. Because who gets to determine whether it's constitutional or not? The Supreme Court, the government. I'm going, man, this thing was screwed from the beginning. Now, it was that was not the promise that they made, but it's how governments always evolve. And I'm going, The more freedom that you have, the greater prosperity of a country. It gives them more money to screw us with. So I'm going, and then they get to the point with the Federal Reserve and just printing up money. They indebt generations and generation into the future, you know, and collapse the economy. And the only infrastructure left is constitutional control of the droning of the checkpoint. And I'm going, wow, man, it was so it's not just a godly people. It's a godly people that have been publicly educated into the support of the Constitution, the concept of being ruled. Right. And I'm going, that's the problem, is that we have submitted ourselves to this constitutional government, but to a government. And I'm going, it's between the ears. We're really being taken advantage of. And I want to make sure, as a young family such as yours going through this stuff, you know, what if you got exactly what you wanted? I want constitutional. Yep, it's constitutional. Well, you went to the Supreme Court and they said it was constitutional. I guess you better get in line and start answering questions, because we just deemed exactly what you went through, exactly the checkpoint, exactly the verbiage, exactly everything the way you want it to happen. They go, it's constitutional. Now what?
You know, it's up to the people, really. The Constitution, America, freedom. It doesn't mean anything if people are a bunch of sheep that aren't willing to stand up. And that's one of the main reasons I try and get people to see stuff like this. I try and encourage other people to, you know, no, say no while you still can. Don't cooperate. If people do not start taking a stand, I mean, you know, you look at what our education system is producing. There's no way I'll send my kids to these public schools. You know, we got to start thinking about what we're doing. The next generation, you got kids being expelled because they point their finger at somebody in the playground. You think that the next generation is not going to grow up thinking guns are evil when they you know, they throw them in jail because they have an imaginary gun?
That's why they do it. It's a psyop.
So get them out of there. Get our kids. Teach them the values. The people. The government only does what the people allow. The people have allowed them to take more and more and more in the name of security, but tyranny never results in security. And you got to stand up. The people, those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety, deserve neither liberty or safety, is what Benjamin Franklin said. It all comes back to what we did at the beginning, to the founding fathers. People had to stand up. They had to stick their neck out. They had to say no. The Constitution means nothing. It means a lot, but only if you're willing to say no. Only if you're willing to say wrong. The Supreme Court does not get to tell us that's the way the law is. That's not what it said. And if just one of us does that, no. But if people stand up, that's the only way that America has a chance. That's the only way freedom ever works, is when people stand up. That's how we got it in the first place.
You know, sometimes, you know, I remember, you know, someone said one time, you know, two things that kind of mean the same thing, opposite ways of saying it. They're going, you know, if you want to, a lot of times people get noticed for standing up for something only because everyone else is on their knees. I mean, it's just, I'm just standing here doing whatever, you know, what? Ask a question, and you get noticed because everyone else is on their knees. You didn't do anything special other than, you know, yo, what's up? And then sometimes to stand up for something, all you got to do is just sit down. And I know what they mean by that. It's just like, you know, I'm not answering your question. I'm not cooperating. I'm just sitting here. Oh, you resist an arrest and you get convicted and you do 60 days, like Ademo Freeman from copblock.org that you're talking about. He was charged with resisting arrest because he didn't help walk himself to the car when he got arrested. Resisting arrest, you didn't help in your incarceration. So I'm just going, wow, man, they're wanting to send a message. So we're very much about finding solutions. What is the solution?
Well, I'm just, people got to start standing up.
I'm like, stand, you know, and how? You know, what's the best way? Because it's all about the money. If you stop using their money, use silver as much as you can. Use gold as much as you can. Use Bitcoin as much as you can. Stop, you know, barter for your food. Grow your own food. You know, start, you know, pulling yourself out the system. Start getting solar. You know, start doing something that you are not helping the beast devour you. And if we all start doing that, we just remove ourselves from their radar screen. We start taking care of our neighbors. We start offering, you know, a healthier environment on our own. We do it with our neighbors. We love thy neighbor as ourselves. Commandment from God. We start doing that, ignore government, they'll go away.
Why did you...
There you go.
Awesome.
So, Donna will send an email with the archive of this, and you'll get the video and the MP3, and you can do whatever you want with it. But the one thing that I've been through this long enough to see where this goes. So you need to be prepared. You need to, okay, what happens when they haul me off and do the 6 hour you're sitting on the side with the handcuffs up? I mean, you got to have like extra diapers, you know, kind of thing. So I'm going, that was one thing with Pastor Anderson. You know, they made him suffer for hours. He had to urinate really bad. You know, they just wanted, what they didn't also, one of the things that they didn't know is they were speaking a lot of Spanish. When he was in there, they spoke Spanish, and they didn't know that he spoke Spanish, so he knew everything they were saying. You know, so this is, I mean, all this kind of stuff came, you know, to the fore. And they were also saying that, you know, part of the checkpoint is they have to have policies on how they use the dogs and the area, blah, 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 which they didn't. They said, no, we don't. And then Janet Napolitano's on a national press conference. Oh, our policy book on the yada. Oh, so there is a policy. There isn't one. Well, she's lying. You're lying. Who's lying? I mean, you know, it just goes back and forth. It's just a game that they play. And not everybody has the resources. I mean, you got $10,000 just to even get an attorney started on your case. You see my point?
I know. And I don't know. I mean, at some point, I just have to say, you know, take it one day at a time. And I feel like at this point, all I can do is try and take a stand until we have no freedom at all. I mean, what else can I do? I just feel like, you know, teach my kids, try and keep them, raise them up in a way that they understand this. And see what happens. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, if they kill me, you know, okay, well, there's heaven after that. So, I mean, I try not to be fearful of it. It's very, you know, I try to play it cool, but I'm very tense and uptight when I come up to those things. And it is scary. I mean, I take it very seriously, but I feel like, you know, the least I can do is do my part to try and take a stand against tyranny and try and encourage other people to do the same. And maybe we could get something resolved without bloodshed, but that seems to be less.
I tell you what is not going to help. When you go through this stuff and you say, you know, I'm just not playing, do your worst, whatever, fine, you know, and, you know, be my guest. But, you know, if your goal is to say Constitution, you just gave them everything they needed to do what they did because they determined whether it's constitutional or not.
They just change it around the way they want it.
You know, it's, well, it's not even the change. I mean, you know who Butler Schaefer is? Writes for Lou Rockwell a lot. He's a constitutional law professor at Southwestern University in L.A. And he, you know, gives this class, you know, to his students. And every few years he'll put up, say, okay, write a constitution. Write any constitution that I can't use against you. And the closest someone came was, all right, in the constitution we'll do only regulation of time. We're going to have time zones. And he goes, all right. Let's see what's constitutional here. Then give me a couple of nanoseconds to come up with that. You shall use X amount of your time in service of you. None of your time shall be used for, you know, I mean, you know, no matter what authority you give them, they'll bastardize it into whatever. And because you gave them the ability to determine whether it's constitutional or not, you legitimize the whole thing by the very concept of that kind of rule. So I'm really wary of that. I mean, that's why the show is Declare Your Independence, because I understand that concept. And it went 180 degrees when they created the Constitution on this universal, and all Alexander Hamilton wanted was, you know, a central authority for the banking kind of collective empire of crap. And, you know, I remember him saying one time, yeah, but without, you know, the ability to tax and a national yada yada, how would you, you know, fund a sustained war? And I'm, well, hell, that's the best reason for not doing it, you know? So I can see where this is going, and we are our own cage builders. And by doing this Constitution thing, they're just sitting there grinning ear to ear, the bad guys going, boah, ha, 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 ha. Our public indoctrination worked.
But there's always going to be a government, so what else is there? I mean, there's going to be a government, so isn't the best we can do to try and have some kind of checks and balances and then stand up for those? And I think, isn't that the real problem, is people have let it slide?
No. You're going to have a government. I mean, okay, at what level? It might as well just have global. You know, why limit it to the United States? I mean, a lot of people are going, okay, we'll bring it back local, but there's this overpowering, overriding treaty, UN, take my gun thing. You know, what's the difference? You make the argument, no, I just want this border here. I want the United States here. Of course, then they're off, you know, laying waste to everybody. But, you know, I'm going, why are we doing this. Well, it's, in our mind, we created this entity. It's constitutional and just America. Well, what's the difference between that and giving it universal global jurisdiction? I mean, what's the leap? What's the difference?
Room for more corruption. On the larger it is, the worse it can get, I would say.
I'm saying down to the freaking individual. I'm a leave me alone-ist, voluntarist, anarchist, whatever you want to call it. I'm just like, look, man, you know, I'll do whatever to get along with my neighbors and not die and kind of register my opinion, but I'm not going to, you know, capitulate the concept that somebody else gets to rule me because they voted or something. You know, I'm just, so I can see where this goes. I already know, and it's like we already lost when we rationalize and justify a certain kind of government. Because once you do that, it's like, you know, arguing over who gets to wear the ring of power instead of arguing, you know, that libertarians are the hobbits and don't want to wear the ring either. They just want to chuck it in the fires of Mordor, you know? So this is, it's I think it's a mistake that we fall into because they've conditioned us this way, is that we're arguing for who gets to be behind the lever. Who gets to wear the ring of power? What the ring represents, you know, I want it to be this kind of ring. And I'm going, it's the ring that's the problem. It's not who's wearing it or what kind of ring it is. It's the ring, the concept of ruling over others. And that is the power that we go against them. That's what we do. Did you know, who I am? Did you ever Google me or any of that stuff?
I haven't listened to your show because it wasn't my area. I wasn't familiar with it. I've stumbled across you in videos and stuff now that, you know, we've been talking about this because I'm looking at different checkpoint videos and things like that.
Yeah, my thing...
I don't know your background.
Libertarian activist, blah, blah, blah. I'm the one that created the Ron Paul Lovolution logo.
Okay, cool.
So it's, I've been in touch with the next generation, these young guys that are doing... And I'm starting to see that they're really evolving past this... You know, any kind. It's just like, look, man, I'm just a leave me aloneist. Yeah, but we got this piece of paper that said, yeah, whatever. You know, it's between the ears. You know, it's an understanding of. So, I mean, having gone through this, just like you have with young kids and so on, is, you know, what is the foundation that I want them to understand? Constitution? Well, you might as well just, you know, spread eagle before the Supreme Court. They'll tell you what's constitutional. Beating the crap out of you is constitutional. Droning you is constitutional. War is constitutional. Taxing the crap out of you is constitutional. Public education is constitutional. You see my point? Hey, I got.
I see your point.
All right, I got my next guest coming up. You know, good luck to you, and stay in touch, will you, please? You got something else, you know, come back on, all right?
Will do, yeah. Anytime, Ernest. Good being on here, and great chatting with you. You take care over there.
You too. Thanks, Gavin. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Pastor, I got you.
Hey, Ernest.
Here we go.
Those of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare. I don't have my voice back yet. Independence, okay? With me, Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. But I'm getting better. I held it off. I didn't get real sick. I'm like, you know, I'm just, I win. Yay. Okay, but I can't talk. All right. Now we have somebody that can, Pastor Chuck Baldwin. I just know his ears have been ringing over the past couple of weeks. I mean, his name's come up a lot. We're going to talk about that. Let's go ahead and check in with Pastor Chuck Baldwin. Pastor, how are you?
I'm doing well. Sorry to hear about your voice, Ernest. Good to be with you.
You know, the one thing that came up, let me tell you who we've had on. We had a Pastor Greg Dixon in studio. And he was talking about, you know, Indianapolis Baptist Church and what was going on with that. But it really segued into a bonus segment that we did with a pastor in Nebraska. that he goes and he gets 11,000 square feet of a building across the street from City Hall. And he wanted to, you know, I'm going to get this building. We're going to turn it into a church. We're going to do whatever we want. We just want to be left aloneism, no 501c3 thing. We're just going to, we're all good. Thinking that they're going to be protected from the ravages of the city planning guy that, you know, is there local. And he's like, yeah, peace out. Do whatever you want. We don't care. It's nice to take that old building and do something with it and have the gifts of your congregation do the plumbing, electrical, and so on. You know, have a good time. Right on. We'll go check it, make sure it's safe and done. Well, of course, like all over America, here comes this Agenda 21 thing. You got the new city manager and the new city attorney, and they're going to tell you what you can and can't do, and there's a plan. Everybody's got it. They got a plan for us, and you're not with the plan. And you know, a lot of that plan is giving us more money. Okay, so he's starting to come in with some problems. And the thing that Pastor Dixon was going on about is that even not being a 501c3, if you're meeting, they say, "Hey, man, you're a church. You know, according to us, you got and we're gonna get your goodies, and we don't care. Here's the bulldozer." So your name kept coming up a lot and so on, like, you know, the inspiration for a lot of things. Here's Pastor Baldwin up in the Flathead Valley in Montana, Kalispell. We've been up there. It's very beautiful. And, what assets do you have to even take? So I'm going, this is one thing that I want to talk about, because the last gentleman, a good Christian guy on the last hour, won a contest that he did with Checkpoint USA and Cop Block and Free Talk Live. They judged anyone that could depict this roadblock stuff, you know, just checkpoints. And he and his three young children from, you know, 6, 4, 1, and his wife video recording him going through a checkpoint, you know, am I being detained? I'm not playing this game. And the guard, he goes, by what authority are you doing? He goes, the Constitution. And he was arguing, Constitution? I'm going, yeah. You know, the Constitution is the government. The government says it's doing it constitutional. And who do you ask? The Supreme Court. And they say, of course it's constitutional. You know, we say it is. We're the ones that get to determine that. So my thing is, you know, good Christians such as yourself, and we see you every Sunday. You're in my living room, okay? But I'm looking at it. The Constitution, the promise of the Constitution, I'm really wondering if that is the kind of thing we should be. Because they get to say what's constitutional. They do all this stuff to us in the name of Constitution. Here come the drones. Here comes the surveillance. Here comes even Rand Paul, we had in the first hour, is on video on Cavuto saying, yeah, well, I don't mind if they used drones and law enforcement. What, I just don't want them regular surveillance. Well, I know where that slope goes. So they're following somebody that's doing, you know, you're on the Southern Poverty Law Center list and you get to have your own drone because, you know, criminal because they said. So this Constitution thing, you got to help me out with, will you, Pastor?
Well, it's absolutely clear in the Federalist Papers and the writings of the Founding Fathers that the onus of responsibility to be the ultimate check and balance against the kind of usurpations of the Constitution you're describing rests with the state. The problem is that we have so many people in our state governments that do not recognize their authority and their jurisdiction to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. They have acquiesced and surrendered to, as you said, the U.S. Supreme Court and the federal government in general to decide what is and what is not constitutional.
So who does?
Until we get state governors, state attorney generals, state secretaries of state, legislators, senators, who understand that this is a system of federalism. This is not nationalism. Our country was never created as a nationalist country. It's a federalist system, meaning you have checks and balances. Checks and balances include not only the three branches of government in Washington that are supposed to provide that, which they seldom do, but more importantly, with local state autonomy. I mean, this is, you know, I call it nullification, if you will. But this is what the states have to do. They have to recognize their authority under the Constitution to protect the freedoms of the people. And whenever the federal government usurps those rights, usurps the constitutional boundaries set against them, and they decide that they're going to do what they want to do, and the states are supposed to just roll over and play dead, the states have got to fight back. And I think that that's happening. It's not happening near enough. Oklahoma right now is kind of setting the example for us. You know, they're really fighting Obamacare, and you know, they're not bending at all on this. And there's a few other states that are doing likewise. But that's the answer, Ernest. The states have got to rise to the challenge.
You know, I'll give you an example of what, you know, my firsthand example of it. It was 2004, I think it is. If you do a Google search on Ernest Hancock and Frank Navarette, Frank Navarette, and the show will come up. Frank Navarette was the Arizona liaison from the state of Arizona governor, Janet Napolitano, now head of the Gestapo, was the Arizona liaison to the Department of Homeland Security. You had Ridge at the top, and or Ashcroft, I think it was Ridge. Ridge is the head of the Department of Homeland Security, and he had 50 representatives in each of the states. Well, this guy, Frank Navarette, was, you know, worked his way on up in corruption in law enforcement from the early 80s during all kinds. It's a long story. But he goes off into the intelligence community and Eastern Bloc and making sure they get their listening post on Motorola's cell phone technology that was going around Europe and then South Africa and, you know, South America. And all of a sudden, boom, he's here in Arizona as the liaison. I'm like, I already know where this is going. He made the mistake of coming on my show. Because he thought Sheriff Arpaio had a show on the same station that I was once a week. He did a thing and he was there and he just kind of figured the station, oh yeah, well, they're Sheriff Joe Arpaio guys, so obviously I can go on Ernie's show. Little did he know. And the one thing that I asked him, I'm going, when the state, you do this, you know, level orange, level red, level yellow, level whatever that they're doing in this terror threat thing, and all of a sudden, you know, there's some kind of threat in Miami, and they were searching every trunk and open up every car going to the airport at Sky Harbor, shut down the airport, doing, and people, man, they complained. Well, all of a sudden, even Janet Napolitano's going, man, I don't think that went over too well. So I'm going to him like, all right, when a governor tells you to get bent, they say, no, we're not doing this. We're not going to level whatever. You can, you know, just take it and shove it. I go, then what? Well, you know, I wouldn't recommend, you know, I go, what? You send them to the gulag? I mean, are they going to Siberia? What do you do? You know, you go, well, yeah, who do you work for? Well, I get my check from the state of Arizona from a grant from the federal government. And I'm going, okay, so are you guys just friendly advice? Are you going to force your way? Do we start getting armored personnel, militarized droning of the state because a governor won't comply? I say yes. And then what? You know, how are we going to fight this battle? We're already inviting government into our lives. It's just we want to turn the dials. I want to reset.
Arizona has been one of the hottest real estate markets in the past, up until the last couple of years. Homes that were once going for $500,000 to $1 million in prestigious areas are now going for less than half of what the original purchase price was. That makes it a very good time to buy. So if you were ever thinking of retiring to Arizona's inviting climate and laid-back and friendly lifestyle, now is the time. That's where I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty, and I have provided a way for you to search for properties that are of interest to you, all at your own convenience and without having to give out any personal information. Visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com to start your search today. And when you're ready to make a move to Arizona's warm and sunny climate, please feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. Many are working hard to make sure Arizona is not only a beautiful place to live, but a free and peaceful one as well. So what are you waiting for? Make your move today by calling 602-828-1819. And don't forget to visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock. Where is the
weight of the world on my shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive till love is found. Now ask yourself,
where is the love? Right here. Right here on Declare. I can't do it yet. My voice isn't here. Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Pastor Chuck Baldwin from Kalispell, Montana, Flathead Valley there. Very nice, beautiful place. In fact, we've had some people from Arizona move there. And I'm sure, and we went to visit last summer, and we go, you know, it's a very nice place. And a lot of people like, you know, we're going here to make our last stand for what? Let's go ahead and find out from Pastor Chuck Baldwin. Now, what do you think the common theme is? What is it you're trying to accomplish there in Flathead Valley?
Well, we came here going on 3 years ago now because we believe that this was the place that our family was supposed to be in light of things that are coming and, you know, the good ground that people often talk about. And I can tell you that in the almost 3 years we've been here, Ernie, that something is happening here because people are coming from all over the country. Some of them know about us, and some of them do not. But they're coming. There's a innate sense of longing and desire for this place, and it's just amazing to me how many people are just—they don't know each other. They don't know anybody else is doing this. You know, this is just something they've decided to do as an individual or as a family. And when they get here, they discover that there's a whole bunch of us that are already here and others that are on the way. So, you know, I think this is a God thing. This is something that the Lord is putting in the hearts of people. Now, I'm certainly not suggesting that, you know, God is leading everybody to the Flathead Valley. That's ridiculous. Of course not. There are people, good people, patriot people, Christian people scattered all over the country that God is going to be using in those locations. But I'm just saying that there is something happening here in the valley. Too many people are coming here that have no contact with anybody else, nothing that would inspire them, you know, saying, oh, yeah, so-and-so's going, so I'm going. And so I don't know what it is, but something is going on here. I can tell you this, that I'm not the least bit disappointed that I came. I mean, my only regret is I wasn't here sooner. And yeah, I just think that this is the place where true freedom-loving people can find friendship and loyalty and like-minded people. You know, a lot of these are Christian people that go to church every Sunday, and when they try to talk about things that are going on, things you talk about on your show all the time, and they get that deer in the, you know, headline stare, and people act like they're from Mars, and, you know, they're shunned sometimes and, you know, relegated as some kind of a crazy person because of what they believe, and they're tired of that. They've just had it. You know, they're saying, dear God, is there not a place somewhere where I can go to church and be among people that understand the principles that I believe and don't look at me like I'm an idiot when I talk about, you know, questioning the government about this or that? When they come to Liberty Fellowship here in Kalispell, that's exactly what they find. I had a lady and her mother, elderly lady, she's probably in her 60s, and her mother is in her 80s, and they just packed up and sold everything down in Arizona, sorry about that, and came here to Montana, just the two of them. And she came up to me last week after the service, and she said, you know, I can't tell you what a joy it is to be able to come to church with a bunch of people that don't treat me like a nut. I just feel like I feel, you know, love and fellowship like I've never felt in my entire life. I can't believe it. That's just wonderful. And I've heard that from, you know, scores and scores of people. So, you know, we wanted a place that, you know, that we could invest our lives in, and the principles of liberty would be appreciated and would be understood, and have a camaraderie, a esprit de corps, if you want to call it, among Christian people who love liberty. And that's exactly what we have here at Liberty Fellowship.
You know, one thing that I noticed is in all of your sermons and so on, I get a lot out of, thank you, good history lessons, and you tie it into proper organ. One is you have a lot of venom for other pastors that are just, you know, rolling over and how much can I get of my faith-based initiative, and here's the database, and you know, we have no king but Caesar. I mean, you know, you're very critical of that, but I understandably, but do you think you're having an impact on these pastors? Are they starting to be convicted in their own minds of what they're doing and capitulating to?
I know we are. I know we are having an impact upon pastors, not nearly as much as I wish we would. But the thing that we are having more of an impact with are people in the pews. And that's really what I think is going to be the saving grace of what we're doing. Is I don't hold out a lot of confidence for the pastors, to be honest with you. They are entrenched in the 501c3 tax-exempt government corporation. They are entrenched in political correctness. They're entrenched in this ideology that we do not talk about politics from the pulpit. They're entrenched in this prosperity theology kind of mindset.
God wants you to be rich, and if you give us a little bit more money, you'll get richer.
God wants them to be rich. You know, that's for sure. And their retirements and their salaries and pensions and insurance and multiply it up, and boy, you know, it's a lot, and they're enjoying it. And I'm not saying that there's not good men that are caught up in it, that are ignorant of it, but when the thing that bugs me about that is whenever you try to expose them to the truth and they reject it out of hand, they reject it without even a second look, then it's more than ignorance. You know, there's a verse in the Bible in Peter that says, this they willingly are ignorant of. And I think that's the case with most of our pastors. This they willingly are ignorant. They don't want to know the truth.
You know, that's one thing that we find in, the freedom fight, or just, you know, leave me aloneism quest, is that there's willful ignorance. It's active. It's I don't want to know. And I'm okay. You know, that's, and I think I remember in the Bible, you know, a rejection of the truth was kind of like the biggest sin, you know? That was you reject, you know. I mean, it's better to be you don't know than you know and reject, you know. So I'm okay. But my concern, I'm telling you, as much as I think you're on line the path that a lot of people need to be, you know, share the example, this Constitution thing, it's really, I see it as an impediment, because they created the mechanism by which the government gets to determine what is and is not constitutional. The ultimate authority is the Supreme Court. They go, hey, it's constitutional. We deemed it. You want to be constitutional? We just said right here it's constitutional. You know how we know it's constitutional? Because we said in the Constitution that we get to determine what's constitutional. We say it's constitutional, it's constitutional. And I'm going, okay, when we come back, we'll get Pastor Chuck Baldwin's response to that. Because I'm like, man, there's an ultimate truth. And I don't think it's, on some piece of paper, a guy with a shiny badge is telling me he's stopping me at a checkpoint because the Constitution lets him.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Pastor Chuck Baldwin, you know, being the leader the way they should be, you know, by example. And there's, you know, a lot of ways that you can lead, and you can share yours. You can watch his sermons. You go to ChuckBaldwinLive.com or just Google Chuck Baldwin and boom, it'll come up all over the place. I enjoy it very much. We have a lot of good friends of faith come by on Sunday morning, and we just turn on we sit there and chat and what's up and how's it going, and turn on the TV and there he is. Well, not TV. We put it on computer, put it up on the TV, and we watch it, get an hour of Chuck Baldwin, you know, uninterrupted, and says what's what. So there's a lot of ways that he ministers, and he has a new book coming out that he and his son have written. We're going to hear all about. Pastor, go ahead and tell us about your new book.
Yeah, thanks, Ernie. We're really excited about this book. When all this happened with the attempt by Obama and Feinstein to outlaw and ban semi-automatic rifles and severely curtail our Second Amendment rights, Tim and I began to think about the lack of information that was out there as it related to a Christian perspective. And so we quickly went to work to write a book, and it's finished, and it's going to be released next Monday on April 29, and it's called To Keep or Not to Keep, Why Christians Should Not Give Up Their Guns. And what we do is we go into the Bible, Old and New Testaments, hundreds and hundreds of references, and we prove conclusively that nowhere in the Scripture does the Bible command or demand that Christian people lay down their arms in the face of tyranny. that they should not resist, etc. And we prove this from the Bible. We show that the Second Amendment is not just a constitutional issue. It is a biblical issue, and that it's rooted and grounded in the natural principles, the natural law principles of God's Word. And we felt that we needed this because all over the place you've got pastors standing up and telling their people to obey the government no matter what, Romans 13, and they're telling their people that, you know, well, if the government says you got to register your guns, you got to register. If they, you know, say you can't own an AR-15 style rifle, then you can't own an AR-15 style rifle. And so we saw this all over, and we haven't seen a book of this nature in 150 years. And so we wrote it ourselves. It's coming out next Monday, as I said, and it's going to expose this myth that somehow or another our freedoms, especially the Second Amendment freedoms, are something that the government can take away at whim.
Sure they can.
Yeah, and so we show that, no, that when you obey a government dictate that tells you to disarm, you are actually committing idolatry. You are disobeying God, because God has given to every man the responsibility to provide for his family, and that includes defense and safety and security of his home, his children, his wife, his family, etc. When a man voluntarily lays down the tools by which he's able to defend his family, he's committing sacrilege. He's actually denying God. He's an idolater. This is a spiritual matter more than it is a constitutional matter. The purpose of the Constitution was not to create a right. The Second Amendment did not create a right. It simply recognized the right that God gave to us as all the other rights.
All right, let me give you the circle reasoning that I know is coming. I can feel John McCain, you know, getting all built up, and he's ready to do it. Yeah, let me channel him for a second here. Okay, I'm channeling John McCain. Here we go. Yeah? Romans 13 says you'll honor that government, okay? We got rendering to Caesar that which is Caesar's. We got all the biblical references that says, and I know we'll talk about your book on Romans 13 saying, yeah. But I'm like, all right. His position is going to be a good Christian, is you follow your government. You know, and the Constitution was a divinely inspired document by a bunch of, you know, Christians and deists and whatever, and Judeo-Christian, whatever we're, Christian nation, you know, blah, blah, blah. And if you honor the Constitution as you say you do, and the Constitution say you do, in that Constitution, who gets to determine whether it's constitutional? The government, Supreme Court says.
You're wrong, and that's where we disagree.
Okay, well, you know, that's his argument.
Yeah,
so what are you going to say?
But the argument is, A, it's the federal government is not the sole interpreter of the Constitution. That's a bunch of baloney.
Now, tell them that.
I know, but the Supremacy Clause, it talks about that. That's the one everybody uses and says, well, that makes the federal law supreme, and the states have no right to resist. If you read it carefully, it says that the laws and so forth of the Constitution, of the federal government, in pursuance thereof, of the Constitution, in pursuance thereof. So any law that is not in pursuance of the Constitution is null and void. I mean, we've got court cases on this. That's what Marbury Madison was all about. That was the first case that identified that the federal government is not the sole authority of the Constitution. That you have checks and balances, which include the states. And you read the Federalist Papers, good grief. James Madison, even Alexander Hamilton, as much of a statist as he was, recognized the authority and jurisdiction of the states to resist unconstitutional dictation by the federal government. That's the reason we have 50 states. That's why when the Constitution was created, we didn't ban the states and just have a national government.
And you read the Anti-Federalist Papers, and they said, yeah, all that ain't going to matter because they're going to do what they want to do later anyway.
Right, which is exactly the prophecies that they made are coming true.
Absolutely. But
the reason they're coming true is because we, the people, have let it come true.
It was erosion. It's like, we get in, once you get past this, you know, I pledge allegiance to an America, you know, they call them MKers, America, right around America. And, you know, God, country, America, you know, and I'm just like, once you get into that mindset, then you get into the public education system. You get into the public licensing of the airwaves. You get into the licensed television and radio and the 501c3 pulpits. And it goes on and on and on. And all of a sudden, decades go by, generations, and boom, you're on the plantation.
Sure.
And that's where we're at.
That's exactly where we're at. And that's why we've got to return to the roots of what our government and our country was built upon. And, you know, thankfully there are people out there because of shows like yours and so many others around the country, columns like mine and shows like mine, that are waking up, I think, in a way that we haven't seen in, what, 100 years? I mean, we got people today that are absolutely, they are on board with what the true meaning of the Constitution is. They understand the principles of liberty, and they're willing to fight for them. You know, I think this gun control issue that we just walked through was a prime example. I mean, they thought this was a slam dunk. They really, really did. Obama and Feinstein and those other gun grabbers in D.C., they really thought this was a slam dunk. They had the Sandy Hook killings, a bunch of kids killed. They said that they were killed by a semi-automatic rifle, which I don't know if that's true, but that's what they say, that's a common news report. This, you know, the hearts of the people were tugged. You know, boy, we got to do something, common sense, gun legislation, blah, blah, blah. This is a slam dunk. But what happened? The vote was taken a few days ago, and Feinstein's bill crashed and burned. Every element, there were three major elements to the bill, and not one of them passed. And you could see the frustration and the confusion in the faces of these people. They really don't know what hit them. Well, what hit them was, were there tens of millions of firearms were sold. I understand 10 million in 2 days. After the news got out that this bill was going to be introduced in the Senate, within 2 days, 10 million, mostly black guns, were sold in America. The ammo left the shelves en masse. You can't find 22 ammo on a sporting goods store anywhere. You can't even hardly find a Glock pistol anymore. You can't find an AR-15 anymore. I mean, the manufacturers are 18 months behind the curve trying to catch up with all the supply that left the stores in a matter of days.
Hey, we're coming up on a break, and I want to tell this quick story. My daughter-in-law, for her birthday, I took her shopping yesterday, and she got a sewing machine from us. Well, she wanted to get sewing supplies and so on. They were charged $1 billion for this case. I go, you know what? We can go to the Sportsman here, you know, and you go into the camping section, fishing section. I can get you a lot better tackle box for all your stuff for half the price. So we went there, get this, and I saw at the checkout counter, Saturday morning, you check in, you get 100 lottery tickets, and the first 100 get to buy limited amount of ammo for 1 day.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. Cause out on the edge of darkness,
oh, getting on the peace train.
Peace,
you know, and it, I'm very encouraged by having people like Pastor Chuck Baldwin out there representing, you know, there's a higher authority, you know, and it's, I'm really feeling that we're going down the dark path if we advocate for a structure that would tell other people how to live, certainly from, you know, Mordor on the Potomac. And I'm just, you know, is that the problem? Or is it they're not doing it right? You know, we need to take more control of our government that will control others the way they should be controlled and not the other way they should be controlled. You see my point? So I'm just like, if you're going to have a higher authority, I mean, should it be, you know, a Christian-based government? Should it be a theocracy? Should it be? I mean, you know, where do you stop? You know, do we need to have laws to take care of those gay Muslim polygamists down the street? I mean, are we going to, you know, use our turn at the ring of power behind the levers to do whatever it is that we want? I mean, what is it that we want? You know, these are the questions that we need to answer. And I'm telling you, you know, some people are going to be very influential in the future of this. And I need to You know, I kind of got to map out for my direction. I'm gonna do that, you know, be Christian thing. You know, I'm going to love my enemy. I'm going to love thy neighbor. I'm going to, you know, be an example. I'm not going to, you know, give them an excuse to go pound me on the head. But that doesn't mean they're not going to start pounding. And at what point do you resist? I mean, where's the justification? For libertarians, it's always, I do not advocate the initiation of force or fraud for political or social or economic gain. Advocate the initiation of fraud or force. You know, I mean, no, advocate the initiation of force or fraud. So I'm going, okay, so they're initiating force and fraud against me. What do I do?
Sure.
Am I able to defend myself? And at what point? You know, when does the deal be brought? Because the Constitution deal, they always say the social contract thing, Pastor, and they say, you know, the social contract is whatever they say it is. And I'm going, that deal had the Bill of Rights, and it says Congress shall make no law doing fill in the blank, and they do like every single one of them. They're violating. At what point does the Constitution become a null and void document? When does that happen? How bad did they have to get?
Well, if you go back into our history, and I, you know, we just went through April 19th, which is we call Patriots Day. Historically, the date is just as important as July 4th.
I need you to get into the microphone. I'm starting to lose you.
Okay.
There you go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead. Just yell it out, man.
April 19 is just as important as July 4th. And the thing that started our quest for independence was when the British Crown sent 800-plus troops to Lexington and Concord on orders to do two things. One, to arrest Sam Adams and John Hancock. Two, to seize a cache of firearms that were stored in Concord. It was then that Pastor Jonas Clark, and his male congregants from the Church of Lexington stood on the green outside their church house, muskets in hand. And when the British troops saw them, they opened fire. Eight of those men were killed instantly. They returned fire in self-defense. They marched to Concord Bridge, where hundreds of colonists had amassed a defense, and the fight for independence was on. Okay, all of the rhetoric, all of the debate, all of the redress of government, all the civil channels that had been taken for the last several decades previous to that, ended when the Crown sent troops to confiscate the guns of the colonists. Okay, that's when it started, and that was the cause of the Revolutionary War. We owe everything to those men who stood on Lexington Green and Concord Bridge and resisted the British by force when they came for their guns.
No, I understand your,
okay.
Your
well, that's,
point.
That's where the line is. That's where the line is.
Well, I've done the Appleseed rifle training. I know that the rhetoric of and how it, you know, and I get it and I agree. I have complete understanding. But the Revolution was in the minds of brush fires and the fires in the minds of men a decade before that.
And it's in the minds of men now, Ernest.
Right.
Let me tell you, I mean, this is one of the things I love about Montana. I know you live in Arizona, and of course you got the big city there. Like any big city, you got all the big city problems. But there's a lot of liberty-loving people in Arizona. And I can tell you, I can't speak for Boston or Chicago or Miami, but I can speak for the Flathead Valley of Montana. The line in the sand is already there in the minds and the hearts of tens and hundreds of thousands of able-bodied men and women in this state. The line in the sand is already drawn. It's not going to happen. I'm telling you that.
No, I agree. I know they're not going to disarm. I've been on, you know, national television saying this very same thing. They're going, well, you know, you're going to this and you're going to that. I go, look, the American people are not going to disarm. I don't care what, you know, laws they pass. I lost that gun. I sold that gun. I buried that gun. You know, now what? I mean, you know, yes, they come beating in your door. You'll be handing them over just like everybody else. Yeah, all they know about. I'm not going to fight them right then on their terms at 3 o'clock in the morning with them drawing automatic weapons and body armor. You know, I'm like, oh, yes, boss, how high? And then it's on. But the thing is that I'm going, you know, where's the line? You know, when do you make that determination? Well, the second they, I go like this, there are two things. One, It was door-to-door gun confiscation and two door-to-door, you know, son confiscation and draft for whatever. Those were my two lines. You made that decision early on. I made that decision when they come for the guns, which they're starting to do. And I'm going, you know, what do I do? Well, I'm going to double down on the love. Seriously, I see it as a big, giant, fat arrow in my quiver that they hate more than anything else is they just, you know what, I love you, man. You know, I'm not going to sit there and allow you to execute me. But, you know, I can see they're starting to lose the battle. They're losing. Right now, they're losing because they're being so desperate and so tyrannical. And you set a good example there. And I'm I know we're shipping a bunch of Arizonans to Montana, by the way. I know that. So, you know, this is, and they're going there for the very reason that we are advocating here. Look, man, you know, where are you going to make your stand? What kind of life do you want to lead? What kind of atmosphere you want to be in? And let's talk about Kalispell. You move up there. What can you expect as a lifestyle? You kind of just, you know, because it's not about how hot or cold you are. It's how much peace of mind you have.
Well, yeah, that's true. But it's also about who you're with. And I think that that's one of the things that separates the Flathead Valley from a lot of places I've lived. You know, you go through a lot of places, especially the bigger metropolitan areas, and you really are almost totally alone in a crowd. You know, you just hard to find people that are like-minded. I came here and I found that even a lot of people that they may not come to my church, they may not call themselves Christians, blah, 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 blah. We may not agree on everything, but boy, when it comes to these essential elements of the fundamentals of liberty, they are there. And they are full of conviction and determination, and they understand the issue. I mean, not everybody does, of course. We've got our same problems here you got everywhere. But on the whole, you've got a greater understanding than I have found just about anywhere else that I've ever lived.
Tell us what the average gun ownership per household is in Montana.
According to the government stats in the state, the average Montanan has 27 firearms in his home.
You know, that's like, damn, I'm a slacker, you know? So I probably make the news crowd, they put it out on the lawn kind of thing, but man, I'm not in Montana, I can tell you that. So, you know, my thing is, yes, I do believe it's going to be the gun issue. You know, that is, you know, definite, yeah, here they come. Because I see it, you know, like L. Neil Smith puts, it's a Vulcan mind meld into the mindset of government, how they see you, you know, your livestock.
Can I give out the web address for that?
Oh, book? Please, go ahead.
That's keepyourarms.com. If anybody wants to get that book, why people should not give up their guns,
let me turn that back. You know, keepyourarms.com. Is that correct?
That's right.
Keepyourarms.com. Go check it out. Pastor Chuck Baldwin, a leader from the pulpit representing the freedoms for Americans. Liberty Fellowship. Go check it out. We check them out every Sunday in my living room for a reason.
Thank you, Ernie.
You bet. Hold on a second, Pastor.